Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Why isn't there any public debate on the conflict in Ukraine? Why have the elites embraced war and shunned negotiations? Where's the anti-war movement? And more importantly, how is all of this helping Ukraine and its people? Crosstalking the West and Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Maloof in Reston. He is a former Pentagon's senior security policy analyst. In Winnipeg, we have Alan Freeman. He is co-director of the International Manifesto Group, as well as a researcher at the University of Manitoba in Canada. And in Oxford, we cross to Roger McKenzie. He is an international editor. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Michael, let me go to you first here. I'm titling this program Sacrificing Ukraine. Apropos, there was a very interesting article in the New York Times a few days ago titled The U.S. Should Be a Force for Peace in the World. Well, I think we should all agree with that. But one of the most important takeaway in the context of Ukraine and elites is this sentence here, two sentences. In diplomacy, one must attempt strategic empathy, seeking to understand one's adversaries. This is not weakness. It is wisdom. And I can't think of a better way to encapsulate the madness that we're all experiencing. Michael.
Well, we're just seeing the opposite. We've been at war for 22 years plus. And I don't see any ending to it in terms of the United States, but it's driven by ideology. It's also driven by a hoax, and it's a hoax that the Democrats have to live with. And since the United States remains the superpower of the world, whatever it does, says, or breathes, or thinks, that's what rules these days. And and we're seeing this now with. We're seeing rebellion to this notion in the world by other countries, such as the BRICS, now the ASEAN countries that want to divest themselves of the U.S. dollar. And that's just symptomatic of how other countries of the world are sick and tired of the U.S. constantly at war, weaponizing their economies and driving the world into a constant frenzy on the brink of default on our end. And also depression on their end. So it's something's got to give, and we're seeing the press in the United States as in lockstep with this administration. They're actually controlled by this administration. And when you have something like this, and you don't have opposing voices, and they're being kept down because we've weaponized our own law enforcement, it's a sad state. And so. At least other countries are beginning to rebel, and I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, well, Alan, I mean, that's a good segue to what I wanted to ask about, you know, in my introduction. You know, where's the anti-war movement? I mean, this is an elite project. There's no debate. I mean, I remember, you know, with the run-up to the Iraq War, there was a lot of debate. There was a lot of protesting. It was on national television. It was in the newspapers. Eventually, these people got shut down. But it did happen. There were protests, particularly in Europe here. Alan, what has happened? Is it just because of the internet and you can control what people see and hear? Alan.
Yeah, well, I think the basic problem is that we don't live in a democratic society in the West. Now, that's a truism, right? And it could be a trope, people say, you're just saying that. But in the following sense, there is a systematic sentiment of opposition to the war in the West. If you look at the polls, there are between 20 and 50% of the population, in some cases even higher, such as Austria, who don't want the war, want negotiations. They find no expression in any parliamentary party. That means that 20% of the population have no representation in parliament. There would be 30 MPs in the British parliament. There would be 20 in the US parliament. There would be 50 or so in the Canadian parliament. God knows how many in the German parliament, if there was a real representation. Now, what's happened, and the reason for this, is the parties were, the original idea of a party is it represents what the people want to say. They've been turned into the opposite. They tell the people what the rulers want them to do.
Yep.
And this is very clear. Let me give you just one example. There was a very big group of MPs in the British Labour Party And we know how big the support for that sort of view is because of the vote that Jeremy Corbyn got in the last election. And they wanted to sign a declaration calling for peace. That's all, calling for peace, issued by the Stop the War movement. They were told that if they did that, they would be expelled from the Labour Party. Now, that kind of thing, you look at the way the democratic elections are conducted. I mean, I'd be very interested to see what other people think of the candidacy of Robert Kennedy, who has come out for negotiations, and how he will fare, but he's already coming under the full-scale media attack.
Yeah, well, he's a perfect example of how you crush someone. I mean, a man of that kind of political pedigree, it's really amazing here. Let me go to Roger here. You know, kind of echoing what Alan was saying, we had the foreign minister of Germany, Annalena Baerbock. She said she didn't care what her constituents thought when it came to Ukraine. That's echoing exactly what Alan said here. But you know what, Roger, what's really pathetic is that they get away with it, okay? And, you know, for months and months and months leading up to this conflict, every single program I recorded here on Crosstalk, on RT, warned everyone a conflict is coming. And when it came, what was their result? Not that I was right, is that I was censored and I was deleted from YouTube. These are the people we're dealing with. Roger.
I think it's really easy to have this discussion in a kind of very global north sense. When you look at the support for this war across the world, most of the world does not support what the US and their allies are doing, fighting to the last drop of Ukrainian blood, basically. Most people don't support that. So I think when we're talking about whether or not there's a movement for peace across the world, we shouldn't just talk about it in terms of what the UK, Germany, the US, what's going on there. But even then, actually, there is a, certainly in the UK, there's a very vibrant anti-war movement still in here. What they don't get is the publicity, because that's within the control of the neoliberals who control the media and so on, and organizations, other media outlets, progressive media outlets don't get the same attention. But actually, across the world, there's a movement for peace taking place that is massive, where people want to see a negotiated settlement that understands the security concerns of Russia, that understands that the way that the US is trying to have yet another proxy war, and how this is just one more in a step towards the next conflict with China over Taiwan, probably.
Well, see, but Roger, you speak the words of wisdom and reason, okay? National interest. Here, let me go back to Michael here. And that's the problem here, is that it's neoliberalism. Roger is absolutely right, but it's a messianic neoliberalism. What they do is it's being created into a binary. Any kind of negotiation is negotiating with the devil. That's how they framed it. It's a binary. Mm-hmm. That's why we're never going to get anywhere until the last soldier dies on the field. Michael.
Well, I am seeing the world reacting. People are beginning to really react against the U.S.-led unipolar world order. And we're seeing that. It's just being accelerated now because of Ukraine. I first saw it begin when Trump dropped out of the JCPOA. You knew right then and there was a benchmark moment. I was in Iran when it happened. And the whole attitude, the whole atmosphere just changed, that we are in for a big change. And that's what's beginning to happen now. And we're seeing the Saudis and the UAE switching over away from the U.S. dollar. I mean, all of this is trending. But to get to your point, I'm working with a group of retired generals who want to bring peace, who've seen war. They've had enough of it. And there has to be an alternative. But you're also dealing with ideologues in this country under the Biden administration, and they are still leading. And that's Victoria Nuland and Biden himself, who actually prompted and encouraged the coup in 2014 in Ukraine, because they see Ukraine as the last vestige of ultimately trying to contain Russia, if not bring about regime change there. And it is a dying effort. You see Tory Nuland on the air talking about and encouraging the bombing of Crimea. I mean, this and droning Crimea. I mean, this is going on and on until we can get rid of this administration. But now that's in question because everyone's questioning the integrity of our elections. And democracy is gone in this country. We pay lip service to it, but it's a tragedy how events have turned. We don't have a country anymore. We don't have a southern border. We've lost our own sovereignty. Yet we're defending the border of Ukraine. I mean, this is preposterous. And the American people are rightfully concerned about this, but they have their own problems. They have inflation they've got to deal with, all self-inflicted by the Biden administration
That's exactly the point, Alan. Russia was supposed to be punished here, but what these neoliberal elites have done is punished their own people. Of course, these elites never feel the pain, Alan.
Well, the elites are chosen by the ruling class, which are the property owners. That's what one has to realize. We live in a society in which the dominant class, which is the property owners, choose the state. And then the state tells everybody what to do using the party system. So as Santayana says, the thing is not to laugh or cry, but understand, and I would say organize. You have to rebuild a movement of the left, in my opinion, because I don't think the right is going to provide the solution, which will actually organize people to recognize their interests do not lie in oppressing their fellow workers and people abroad. So, you know, as Robert Kennedy puts it, you can either have a democracy or an empire, but you can't have both. So if you get people to begin to understand that empire is inimical to the interests of ordinary folk in Europe, in America, in Japan, in Australia, then you will begin to get...
Well, but the problem is here, the left and right have forgotten about the issue of class. I'm a conservative. Class is a very important issue, but the elites don't want to talk about it. Gentlemen, I have to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the West and Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the West and Ukraine. Okay, let's go to Roger in Oxford here. One of the biggest a major departure from the Cold War is that the Western elites, led by the United States, obviously, have decided to go toe-to-toe with a peer or near-peer power. That was something during the Cold War which was a big no-no. You can fight on the periphery, you can have proxy wars and all that, but what we see with this administration, and it's lackeys in Europe, my apologies, Alan and Roger, but it's very true, okay? So this is what makes it very dangerous, because the U.S. is actually attempting a peer-to-peer, one-to-one conflict. And at one point, the Russians may react. I'll tell you, living in this country, a lot of people want a stronger reaction to the droning of Crimea, these cross-border attacks on towns. The West is itching for a conflict here, and Ukraine is the trigger. Roger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the provision of these, they're just trying to say training for these Ukrainian fighter pilots to use F-16s and the US saying, well, we're not even going to provide them, but we're very happy for our allies to provide these planes. So, but we've been assured by Zelensky that he's not going to use them over Russian airspace. I mean, this is just nonsense. You know, in the end, we can either rely on politicians to just wake up one morning and do the right thing, or we can understand that in the end, the engine of real change is working class people, and that's what we're going to have to mobilize. You know, it is always about organizing how we're going to get people to stand up and do something about this rotten system that we're under. You know, we're just faced with continual hypocrisy. The United States were really angry because China got involved and helped to broker a peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran. At the same time, they moved heaven and earth heaven and earth to try and get some sort of ceasefire, again, alongside the Saudis. They try to get a ceasefire in the Sudan at the moment. Look really hard, but you'll never find that they have done a single thing to try and get any kind of peace moment sorted within Ukraine, despite the efforts of China, despite the efforts of the African mission that's also been launched. They are absolutely ruthless in this, and they have been telling people this for years, actually, about what it is they're about. And it's this full spectrum dominance approach that the United States, you know, they've had this policy for years. They are clear that anything that comes remotely close to interrupting their economic, military, political dominance of the world, they will come down hard on. So that's why they're coming down hard on Russia, and that's why they're coming down hard on China. And we just have to wake people up to this. And it's an organizing mission in the end for all of us.
Well, Michael,
it's backfiring.
Go jump in, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's backfiring because what the world is beginning to recoil. It's evolving. And it's going to be accelerating. I'm seeing it with countries that want to join BRICS, with this alternative world order, the multipolar world order that's beginning to come up. Look, ASEAN countries, 10 of them, just said they're going off the U.S. dollar. That's significant. Yeah. That is very significant. So they are beginning to recoil against this hegemony by the United States, and because of the weaponization of economies and control that the Biden administration has sought over the world. Look, it didn't do Europe any favors. Look what it's done to Europe. It's made them a basket case.
Yeah.
And they're walking away and going toward Asia now.
This is quite remarkable, Michael. This is what the U.S. does to its friends, okay? Not its foes, okay?
What they do to their friends is they blow up their pipelines. That's what they do to their friends.
Well, it's all part of the game.
Yeah, but Alan, you know, I studied history. That was my academic area, scholarly, and you know, looking at world history, I can't think of a case. Maybe you can, where a hegemon just says, "Hey, you're right. I've changed my mind. Let's all be friends." That's not happening. I'm agreeing with all of you here, but a hegemon doesn't walk away. A hegemon will probably create as much chaos as possible and bring everybody else down with him. Alan.
Well, we're basically isolating ourselves.
Peter, I don't think you're a conservative. I think you're a rationalist. Rationality is what we need. Rationality starts from facts. The USA is not a hegemon. It's an aspiring hegemon that has failed.
Alan, it's a declining hegemon. I think we could all agree with that.
This is the point I was going to make. It has been declining. If you look at the growth of the USA, it's been declining since 1960. It's now zero. Don't listen to the people who talk up what is basically a dead cat bounce and say it's doing well. You look at the average GDP growth of the USA, it's on the rocks. And that is what's behind the difficulty. The problem is not that China is a threat to the US. The US is a threat to the US. That's bringing about a fundamental change because it can no longer even feed its own people by robbing the rest of the world. And the people will wake up to that. And there are cases where that has happened. You've studied history. Look at Portugal 1974 or Germany 1918. Those were the only cases in the West when there have been revolutionary movements of working people that have actually turned governments over. That started with when they realized they couldn't win wars. Now, when the realization hits that this is not a war that the NATO powers can win, I think you'll see a sea change. And what we have to do is build from the ground up the movement that recognizes that you cannot reconcile empire with democracy. And when that happens, I think you'll see quite large movements emerging that will be a powerful effect on rationality. And hopefully, you know, the result will be done in a peaceful way and people somewhere in the state. We've seen people from the military who are saying, you know, this doesn't make sense. Fellow rationalists are saying this is not the way to do things. Hopefully this will happen peacefully. But whatever, if they keep suppressing it, They're going to produce violence. Look at Paris. Look at France. Look at the situation Macron is in. Think about that generalizing. So what we hope is that reason prevails. And if reason prevails, peace will prevail.
Well, I'm really glad my comments triggered you like that, because you were quite I think, prophetic and very descriptive of what's going on right now. Good job, well done. Let's go to Roger in Oxford. Wait, you know, okay, I want to push back a little bit here. We had the COVID lockdowns. We had censorship on a massive scale. We know the powers that be were very much involved in the so-called Russiagate hoax. I mean, the deck is stacked against us, Roger, as much as we may want to organize. And I'm a conservative, but I can deal very easily with progressives on this issue. But and this is what the powers that be want. They want to separate us, always put us in our little boxes and keep us away from each other. And that's one of the reasons this program exists, is to bring a wide group of people together on issues where we can find commonality. Go ahead, Roger.
But I think we should also, going back to what I one of my first comments about looking at this through a wider lens rather than through the global north, effectively, because I think that we really need to use our organizing strengths, use all of the kind of technology that is now available to us, such as even being able to do this call, but use the facilities that we've got to engage more with activists in the Global South who have said that they're not prepared to put up with the continual rule of the United States, being told that they can only trade in the US dollar, basically. They've ditched all that stuff. And I think we need to link in with them, because I think if we're ever to see real change, it's going to come about because people have organized, not just in the global north, but have linked in with similar progressive forces from the global south as well. So I'm really optimistic, actually, because I see a lot of people rising up. I see a lot of people who are not prepared to just put up with the way that it's always been and are looking for a new world, really. They're looking for a new way of organizing things so that the minute they step out of line, that the United States is not able to just say, well, we're just going to now issue with a whole bunch of sanctions against you, because they won't be able to do that if with the de-dollarization that's taking place. So it's massive shift that's taking place. I'm really optimistic that we're going to see some real change, but only, I think, if we make sure that our lens isn't just about the global north, but it's also about the south.
Well, Roger, you can't see them, but I can. Michael and Alan are giving thumbs up in complete agreement. Me too. All right, Michael, where do we go from here? Because again, if you ask people in the West, how important is Ukraine to you? It's really low. It's in double digits right now, but it continues here. And like I said earlier, Russia was supposed to be punished economically, but their own people are. But can they tolerate dissent? After all, Zelensky is the future of democracy and prosperity and everything. All this garbage that we hear on a regular basis. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I think as long as they keep up the pressure that was just described from the global south, the global north, and basically isolate the United States so that it becomes just a speck of what it used to be. In terms of trying to take over the world or force other countries into submission, I think that this is going to be the key. Plus, you need countries and people within the countries now to form a groundswell of opposition to this war and any other wars, because they're obsolete, and we are seeing this. We saw it with Vietnam. That's how the Vietnam War ultimately ended. People got sick of it. I mean, and there was no end game toward that war, except all ideologically inclined individuals who wanted to defeat something that was not the case. No domino theories occurred, and we're seeing an overlay today of the United States still trying to make those comparisons with Russia toward Europe and equate Putin with Hitler. It doesn't exist. But yet they're trying to push that.
What we're all
that
saying
that
is here, for the things to change, there has to be an utter failure on the part of the West, because it is a north-south dimension here. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Reston, Winnipeg, and in Oxford. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.